Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dope Black Women. I'm Rashan, the co-founder of Dope Black Women, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about all things sisterhood. That's what it looks like, how you find one, how it shows up, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. So I recently turned 25, and on my 25th birthday, I was surrounded by what I would call my village. I had 3 days of having fun. I had my close friends, and I had my closer friends, and then I had a day filled with family. And on the Sunday, which was when I was with my really close friends, I actually started crying at the meal because I just felt I was filled with so much gratitude, and I was so overwhelmed with the love that I have around me. And I also felt a sense of proudness that I was able to like maintain the friendships that I had. And I wrote like these love letters. I know it's your birthday, your friends only give you gifts, but I wanted them to understand why how their friendship contributes to who I am today, and how much it means to me. So I wrote them all letters, and they're all different. Like, some might have been 5 sentences, some might have been 2 double side pages, because it wasn't about like writing a letter for a show. It was like being authentic to how I felt in that moment. And I've been doing a lot of reflecting since then, and I've been thinking about how much like having a sisterhood really is an advantage into like maintaining overall mental health and like well-being, and how much I've really needed it for the last year, and probably didn't even realize how much it wasn't an influence and an advantage into getting through the last year. So in thinking about that and reflecting, I thought, you know what, it'll be really nice for this episode of the podcast to be able to talk to someone who I would say is my digital sister, because I feel like we've met on the Dope Black Women WhatsApp group. You come to all of our events, and I always call you the MVP of the events because you always bring the energy and the vibe.
Thank you.
And then just this week, we saw that you met up with Daniela from the WhatsApp group. And I was just like, this is why I just love Brenda, because Brenda just really utilises the group.
I met up with Ashley as well the week before.
Really?
So gallivanting Ashley, I've met with her.
When I saw the picture, it really warmed my heart, because it was like, Dope Black Woman is currently, from my perspective, doing what it needs to do by encouraging different women from different parts of the UK or whatever they are to connect and like make new friendships. So I was like, you know what, let's have Brenda on. Let's have a chat with Brenda.
Let's have a chat. Let's see where this goes.
All things sisterhood, you know?
Yeah.
But something we always ask all of our guests when they come on, the first question always is, what makes you a dope black woman?
Well, I know I've answered this before, and hopefully none of the listeners will sort of go back and check to see if my answers match. I think it changes in time. But what makes me a dope black woman is just knowing my worth, not being afraid of owning my blackness, whether that's my hair, whether that's my skin, whether that's my accent, or how I celebrate, or how I cry, or how I grieve, how I parent. So I do everything authentically from a place where I come from, which is black first. And yeah, that makes me dope.
I genuinely think you're like just one of the like my favorite people that I've met. I just think honestly, I can't wait to meet you in real life, because I just think you've got such an infectious energy. You're such a lovely person. You're really
thank
warm.
You.
And you know I'm not just saying that because I'm recording, because I've messaged you several
times.
Yeah,
oh, I know, we speak all the time.
but I need the listeners to understand who you are, you know?
Oh, thank you.
But obviously we're going to be talking about sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I guess some people might use the term sisterhood. They might say my tribe, my best friend, my girl gang, whatever they want to call it. But for the purpose of this call, we're going to say sisterhood. So for you then, how would you describe what the term sisterhood means to you?
I've thought about this since this afternoon when my brain was wandering and stuff doing work. And sisterhood is a collection of people that I've got along the way. So some I was gifted by chance of birth, so they're my cousins and I grew up with them. Some I collected because they were friends of friends and we resonated and we've really got a strong connection, and that's developed over time. And some through the Dope Black Women, for example, I've got a collection of people. I don't like the word collection, but I think this explains what I mean. So if there's a group of women, all age ranges, you know, we're talking grandmas and we're talking people that I, you know, like 25, there's a big age difference between you and I. But I feel connected in a way that I feel like they've got my back. So a sisterhood to me is a group of people that I have that relate to each other in a certain way, but relate to me in a way that directly influences how I go about doing things. And I don't mean checking in with my friends or checking in with people I call sisters to say, oh, am I doing this right? But I know that if I do something and it's out of line or it's out of character, people will question mark and raise and check in and say, are you okay? Are you doing all right? You know, why did you do that? Why did you say that? And that's part of me finding my foundation and being able to then confidently grow and do what I need to do, knowing that I've got buffers that will keep me on the straight and narrow, but they'll also allow me to grow within myself and not really limit me. So for me, a sisterhood is people that will see me ugly cry. They'll laugh hard with me at the most inane memes. I remember one evening staying up like 2-3 o'clock in the morning with a friend laughing. She was in her house, I was in my house in two different cities. And what we were laughing at is exchanging memes and videos and literally just wetting ourselves laughing, side-splitting laughter till like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I've got friends that will talk about, you know, what are you doing? What's your career doing? Why are you making those decisions? What's your rationale? Have you considered X? Have you considered Y? And they'll lift me up. Like, I'll do the littlest thing and it will be so insignificant to me. But they'll come with like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. That's amazing. And just really gas me up to make me feel like $1 million. So it's a very long-winded way of saying that my sisterhood keeps me grounded. They keep me sane. They keep me on the path that I want to be on and keep me motivated to grow and keep me learning constantly on how to react, how to conduct myself, how to present myself in the best way possible that doesn't harm others, and ultimately means that, you know, after I've left this planet, people that knew me have a good view of who I think I am.
Yeah, I really like that, because I think I asked you the question and I was like, I hope she doesn't ask me back. I don't know how I'd answer it myself. But I feel like you really did encapsulate what it means. I think what you honed in on, and particularly at the end of what you were saying, was about support and about growth. And I feel like that's really, really important. Even to give you an example of something that happened literally moments ago, I am someone that loves traveling. I normally go on holiday like 4 times a year. So it's obviously, with 2020, luckily I had 3 holidays before the pandemic started.
Amazing.
But then this year I haven't had any, and now I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I actually need to go on a holiday. Like,
it's time. Get the passport out.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I've marinated in this pandemic. I've been here. I haven't complained. Guys, we need to get on the plane.
Yeah.
So I was talking to one of my friends and I was like, oh, I might go to Antigua in a few weeks with my family because I need a break. And she was like, yeah, you need a break. And then she goes, but actually, Shan, like, you've just moved. Maybe you should say, like, basically, what we had a conversation where she was basically like, let's just save for a bit and book somewhere at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, it would have been a lot easier for her to have been like,
go
enjoy yourself, go on a holiday, live your best life, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But she actually acknowledged that actually maybe right now that's not what you should be prioritizing. And in situations like that, that like, even though it's really small and it was like a 30-second conversation, mm-hmm, it really does show me how much like she's thinking of like
the big picture.
She's thinking of my benefits. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And it goes back to when you were talking about a minute ago about like different types of friends. You might have some friends that will talk to you about your career, some friends that you will stay up all night, yeah, like laughing at memes.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to get that balance. Absolutely. As well.
And just to go back to what you've just shared, and having somebody who will know what your goals are. And well, like I said, somebody who keeps you on the buffer. So you could have easily gone, I'm going to Antigua, I'm booking the ticket. And you go, yeah, go ahead. And then after you book it, you're like, I've got a whole heap of things now that I'm going to have to deal with because I'm going to Antigua. But your friend knows you well enough to say that actually that stuff that you would have to deal with is the stuff that we would have to talk about, and I know that would cause you stress. So why don't we push it back a little bit? Why don't we prepare for this?
Yeah.
And I've got a friend, anybody who knows me, is I love driving, and I used to have a really nice car, and I miss it so much. And now I'm on a mission to get onto the property ladder, so saving is hard. And I've changed cars. Let me just say, this car drives very slowly, and I can't take off of the lights. And I try to keep shades on so nobody sees it's me, and so on and so forth. It's a very sore subject. I could very easily, and I was very, very tempted several times to buy what I'd considered a better car than what I'm currently driving. But she very quickly said, look, this is a short term. Buy your house, then you can go shopping. But yeah. Whilst I've been telling myself this thing, like a mantra, like, it's only for a year, it's only for a year, it's only for a year, it's only for a year. Just hearing it back, like, look, we know what the plan is. Just chill. That was, it calmed my anxieties down. It made me accept mm-hmm. my lovely little car that ferries me around with a little bit more dignity. And it was like, she was like, look, you're doing exactly what you need to be doing. You're on the right track. And having those friendships that it wasn't a big conversation. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, ooh, like flinch. Whoa, what's going on? It was just like, hang on. We've talked through this, so we understand what we're trying to achieve.
Like your priorities are this. You told me this, so let's focus.
Yeah,
on that
let's focus on that. You know, it'll come. It's not a no, but you know, you've got this. And just knowing that somebody's got me and won't allow my impulses that are harmful to my own plans is incredible. Yeah. I still want a nice car, though.
I sold my car in November last year for the same reason, and it's the same friend that I went to, and I was like, I want an Audi Q2. But an Audi Q2 is £400 something a month. For the spec that I want, it's £400 something pounds a month. Do I have £400 and something a month money to be spending on the car? Which is just the car. It's not the insurance.
Yeah, it's not the running. It's not the...
If something goes wrong, it's not the little things I might want inside the little stacks to keep it. You know what I mean? And she was just like, Shan, it's going to be hot. You live near a station. Like, ride it out. You're fine.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, you can get it. And it's like, sometimes I go to her and I start typing about the car, and then I'm like, I know what she's going to say. And
just forget it.
And it just helps me to stay on track of my goals.
Exactly.
And that's why, going back to when I was saying that I felt really emotional at my birthday, mm-hmm. that is why, because it's like, when I hit certain milestones, I don't think my friends realise how much of me that they're hitting it with me, and vice versa. If I was to get a car, like, I'm obviously going to feel proud and happy mm-hmm. when I eventually get the Audi Q2 that I want.
Yes.
And it's like, she might be like, oh my gosh, your car's really nice. Not forgetting that actually you helped me to get to this point because mm-hmm. you allowed me to stay grounded.
Exactly.
And that's what I was really reflecting on, which is why I wanted to have this conversation. When did you become conscious of the fact that you had a sisterhood?
So it's happened to me twice. Without going into too far, I lost my mum when I was 21. And mm-hmm. I lost my dad when I was 13. But losing my mum was like a big life-changing thing. And I inherited a whole load of responsibilities. Trying to finish uni and all kinds of stuff. You know, when you're 21 years old, you don't want to be dealing with house, and it was not great. And while we're here, guys, if you've got kids, get your life insurance sorted, because it robs your children of their future. I promise you that. Anyway, back to the program. So I had to deal with a lot at that time, and I went from being a 21-year-old university student to somebody who had responsibilities for children with sort of relations that were here, that were under my mum's care, that had special additional requirements, additional needs. I was having to deal with social services, I was having to deal with schools, I had a lot on my plate. And in that time, I'm gonna say cousins, but they're more like cousin friends, I call them cousin sister friends, they really came through in a way that just made me feel like, I am so lucky I've got these guys, you know, whether it's me just feeling very sorry for myself, whether it's like, look, guys, I'm just broke. I can't go out. I can't go to the movies. I can't. And it wasn't a case that they'll say, okay, come, we'll pay for you. They'll be like, all right, we'll change plans. Why don't we come over and we'll bring food? Stuff like that made such a massive difference. Or like, if my mum's birthday was coming up, they would sort of work around so that I wasn't on my own. And it just little things in those first few years, up until the point where I was getting married, I was having a baby. And so we did a lot of stuff together, but I was always super grateful that, you know, we're all similar ages, 20, 21, 22. They stepped up in a big way that mm-hmm. was very effortless. fast forward a little bit, my marriage ended. I became a co-parent overnight. My situation changed very, very drastically. And I realized that I'd lost that connection, which is related to why my marriage ended. That there's a little bit of disconnect. And I ended up finding myself in a flat with my two kids, going, how am I going to reconnect? So much time has passed. But I think in always trying to be myself and not making excuses for myself, very quickly I started to rebuild those relationships. I started to explain what was going on, how I was feeling, how it was impacting me. And naturally, those girls came back, and I was in a different space because my children are a little bit older. I was in a different city, so I made new friends. And those first few months and years, I'd say, with those new friendships were sort of, well, I'm sharing my story not because I'm expecting you to do something about it. And people would just come through. You know, you'd say, oh, you know what, I'm feeling really down. I've got to do co-parenting stuff and it's stressing me out. Or I'm trying to achieve X, this thing's in the way. And without going into too much detail. And they'd come through and it's like, right, no, that's not how we're responding to that, you know. I'd sort of say, I'm going to go, so I want my kids here. This is ridiculous. The impulsive thing to do in a situation where you've got an ex, where the kids are involved, emotions are high, the impulsive thing to do is to go for the jugular and go, right, I'm going to mess this person up. And then they'll be like, no, you're a good mom. The first thing you want to do is be there for your parents. And nobody said it was going to be easy. Calm down. Just hang up the phone, turn it off. Do not react. Do not send this. And after a while, you start to respect what they're saying because they're telling you what the big picture is. So I've experienced sisterhood twice in a way that's sort of been very profound. It makes me step back. And lucky for me is that I've got overlap. So some of the same people that were super close to me back in the day are still super close to me now. And I've got new people in new circles, and I've got new passions now, and I'm into different things than I was when I was in my 20s. And different things are important to me. So yeah, so more recently I would say dope black women, dope black mums, there's a sisterhood that I've discovered in the pandemic period that I didn't realize I needed. Prior to that, I would say probably when I first became when my marriage ended and I was on my own again. And before that, I'd say when I was, so it's sort of been major events have really, if I think about it now, so it's losing my mom, my marriage breaking down, and the pandemic have been sort of three biggest things in my life where they've been life-changing. And that's where I've actually really appreciated and really valued. I mean, I always value them, but it's really made me reflect like, wow, I am so lucky. How did I get so lucky to have such incredible people around me? And they're all talented in their own ways. They're all incredible people. I mean, I'm just like, oh, I can't believe I know this person. If I was to tell you about them, I'm like, well, you should hear about this girl. She does X and she does Y and she's got this and she's got that. And then I'm like, but this one's also just equally as amazing. And I just love them so much. And I'm always humbled that people make time for me in their circles and in their life to really understand who I am. And I always feel like I've played the lottery and I've won and I'm going to get found out. Like, hang on a minute. You've got it too good. We're going to take one or two of these people away. And you need to, you've had your fair share now, but I must say that people often say, I'll say, this is a very general statement. I think the statement is changing and the landscape is changing on how people approach this. But people that have had my back have always been black girls. Not to say I haven't had friends who are not black. I have. But there's a different kind of understanding that I've had and a different kind of support that I've had. And almost people who have given up on me have almost always not been black. And the people that have not given up on me have been black. So they've stayed. And this is not to say I've had friendships that have been and gone. I am very quick to cut people out if I feel that this relationship is not, I'm not bringing myself my whole self to the relationship and I'm not adding value. Yeah. I'll leave the door ajar, but I will walk away. So this is not to say there aren't any people out there that would ring up the show or tweet or say, oh my God, she's not all. No, no, I will not. I will not sit here and say I haven't. But I've had really close friendships where it just sort of mutually dissolved. And if I think back, I don't know whether that's something to do with me not wanting to reach out and going, I've given up, I can't be bothered. Or, but thinking about it, the girls that have been there for me, and I don't know whether it's a cultural thing, whether it's, they've been black. Mm. And not necessarily all from Malawi, where I'm from. They've from, yeah. from different cultures and different places in the world.
I think that's quite an interesting point, actually, because I think when I use the term sisterhood, I think it's, and this could just be me, but I feel like there's an assumption that I'm talking about black women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for myself, if I think about who my sisterhood is, who my tribe are, they're not all black women. The majority are, but they're not all black women. The thing that I guess holds us together in our individual relationships, I guess, are things like race, but then also maybe things like class, and then also things maybe like morals. But I guess when you're black, those things are probably more than likely all going to be closest together.
Exactly. Do you know
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I completely get that.
Yeah. I hate to bring this up, but I think that Black Lives Matter has made a big difference. And I think people who are not blacks' response to Black Lives Matter has made me question
the friendships.
Yeah. And I'm exhausted. I'm not prepared to explain. And I think part of that is, it's just traumatic. It's been really, really traumatic. And so I'm going to say that that's played a part. And that's not just towards women. That's towards men, ex-colleagues, people that I work with, or people that I used to work with, people that I've known, just like seeing what people post. Thankfully, I'm not on Facebook, so I've not hated too many people. But, you know, just little things, and just seeing what's important to people and how it's affected them, or what their response has been like, has made me think, I don't know, you know, this is something that's pretty big going on. You've not reached out to see how I'm doing. And
yeah. And I think, but I do think that's really telling though. And I think equally, I trust that if there was something else, maybe we're not relating to race, but for example, if right now you was to have a divorce, or right now you was to lose a family member, and your black friends or any of your close friends didn't reach out, it would be the same energy you'd have towards them.
Oh, for,
it, really?
For sure. Absolutely. It's not 100%. Necessarily to say I'm saving this feeling towards people that are not black purely because it's a Black Lives Matter thing. This is just an example. So if I, something happened. My kids have just had birthdays. Yeah, their birthdays are like 7 weeks apart. And people that I consider really close, they didn't call to say happy birthday. They didn't wish, my kids really love them to bits. And, you know, the birthdays came and went. And the tradition is people normally call, and we make a big fuss of birthdays in our house. And it sort of made me think, well, hang on a minute. You can't all be busy not calling the kids. And my energy is a bit like, come on, this is important. You know, this thing is important. The kids are important, and so on and so forth. But I'm in a sisterhood, right? So I've gone and complained about this to one of my other friends, and she's gone, there's a lot going on, you know, give people a pass. Mm-hmm. It's a birthday. Just pick up the phone and say, did you know it was Noss's birthday? Did you know, you know, like, flag it up. They could have just been busy, and they could have just forgotten about it. Just don't be overly sensitive. But the point I'm making is that that energy is there. And I don't necessarily think I've spoken to anybody and say, well, I haven't spoken to this girl who is not black, and to say, well, why haven't you talked about Black Lives Matter? You've not checked in on me to see how I'm doing. Because I think, to my mind, I think that that's a very difficult conversation to have with somebody. I think that sometimes people are oblivious, you know, to what's going on. People are busy. So I think I wouldn't want to pick that scab. So I've let things slide. So I've got to be accountable for my actions in maintaining those friendships as well.
Yeah.
So
it's about accountability though, isn't it? And I think what's nice is that your friend was able to say something to you, which was reasonable, and you was able to look at it on both sides and be like, you know what? I do have a right to be upset about this, but I also do acknowledge that, considering that we're in a pandemic, and people generally day to day, even outside of COVID, have their own things going on. It might not have been a priority, but actually outside of the situation, you guys have all shown me in so many different ways that you do have my back and you do support me. Exactly. So there's no point in making a fire.
Yeah.
It's just not really worth it.
Yeah. So the instinctive thing, like I said, is to fight back and to say, oh, you've wronged me, and make it all about me. I still haven't made the call to say, by the way, you missed your nieces and your nephews and your, you know, your favorite kids, you know, you've missed their birthdays. But equally, I've got friends that live far, far away. They're white, and they're clued up. They're on it on the Black Lives Matter, for example, or on my kids' birthdays, and you know, I trust them with my life. So this is not to say that I haven't got any really close white friends that I'd consider as in a sisterhood. Like I said, there's different people do different things in life,
100%. But collectively, they have different roles.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's an interesting setup. I think the older I get, the more black sisterhood friends I have. But equally, I've always been open to having friends from all over the world.
And when we look at friendship groups, what friend do you think you are? You know how people will be like, that's the funny friend, that's a supportive friend, that's a sensitive one. What friend do you think you are?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it depends on who it is. Some friends, I'm the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. And I will ask the difficult questions, and I'll be like, why are you doing that? And, you know, really hold them accountable. Some friends, I'm just fun. I'm just, let's do something hilarious. Let's do something fun. Let's just go out. Let's just eat and laugh for hours and hours. And some friends, I'm super sensitive, and I'll just listen, and I can't offer any advice, but I'll just be the one who's really good at listening, really good at keeping track, checking in, remembering little things like, oh, Shan mentioned something about this. This might be of interest, and if I see it, I'll ping it across. But I think the underlying or the thread that I'd like to think is I'm the one who loves to encourage people. You've seen me post this in our Dope Black Women chat, where it's your win is my win. I absolutely love it when my friends are winning. Or even if strangers share their news and they're winning, I absolutely love it when people win. So I like to think that I'm very encouraging in all situations, but I'm not the kind that will sugarcoat things. So I'll tell you as I see it and give you the advice that I would take. And I remember saying to a friend once, saying that the advice I'm giving you is the same advice I'd give to my sister. So it's not me coming at you with an agenda or anything, because I was giving her advice that was really difficult to do with a relationship. And I was saying, look, if my sister came to me and she had the same situation, I would give her exactly the same advice. This is not because you're not blood or whatever. It was a tough time trying to get that message across. But yeah, I think ultimately I'm encouraging. I think I like to think I'm somebody who listens with a little bit of fun thrown in.
And we mentioned accountability a moment ago. How do you think you can improve? What do you think something that, when it comes to what you bring to a friendship, is something that you can improve on?
Oh, there's nothing. Of course there's nothing. I'm amazing. Everybody loves me. I think there's always room for improvement. Always. I think the minute you start thinking I've got it locked, then you've failed. You've missed the mark altogether. I think that that's a conversation that's a two-way conversation. And I think that I had a conversation with a friend recently, and I was like, how can I support you better? You know, how can I be a better friend to you? And I think that's something that is dependent on who I'm referring to. Some people say to me, just don't talk so much. Just listen, take a chill pill. And actually, Brent, I don't need your advice. That's not why I was calling you, because I might be thinking this is the right thing in that situation. So I guess being sensitive and reflecting, and sometimes just taking a step back more often, and thinking about what I'm doing and what I'm saying would be helpful. And also, I'm very, I've noticed this a lot, particularly maybe in the last year, since the pandemic, maybe a little bit before then, where I observe people's interactions with me, like, oh, we were speaking every week and now it's every 2 weeks and every 4 weeks, or, you know, there's been a long time, or the type of conversations we're having have changed. So I try and keep track, not like writing notes down, but just mentally sort of checking in and seeing what could be causing that. Have I done something to upset them? Have I done something that might have caused them to not want to maintain that level of communication?
100.
So the level of communication, the type of communications are really important. Or if I see myself being the one who's pulling away, and then I have to think, well, what have I done? What could be, what's upsetting me? So there's a situation that I'm going through right now, and it's sort of been brought up to me, like, you seem really distant. And I knew I was being really distant, but when it came to the fore, and now I have to make a decision, like, actually, I do know what's bothering me. And if I'm going to be a good friend, I need to make sure that I've got time to talk this through. But that's difficult. And a part of me wants to just let it fade away, ghost somebody. And I absolutely hate ghosting. It's not nice. Not nice to be on the receiving end. And I think we should do better and not making people feel ghosted. So that's something that I'm going to have to make time for.
I'm in a similar situation like that, actually, at the moment. And I think it's just hard because it's such an important decision, isn't it? And it's something that, depending on who's on the receiving end, you may not be able to come back from.
Exactly.
And also, I think we have to acknowledge that sometimes we feel, like, as women, well, I can only talk for myself, but I know for myself, I'm quite hormonal. So I might feel like this today, and then next week,
it was like, what was that?
The issue was, it was like, that was nothing.
Yeah.
So it's like, sometimes I need to take that step back, and I need to, like, not ghost, but just not interact as much. So I can try and rationalize with my own thoughts and understand is how I'm thinking or feeling, how I'm actually thinking or feeling. And something that I found really useful was talking to someone that has that I'm close to enough to be honest with me, but doesn't know that they were like, they won't have a bias when I go to them for advice.
Sure.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes people can fall short to giving a bias because they care for you or love you, but that's not actually beneficial. And I went to someone and I said, this is my situation. And what was interesting is because they had no idea who I was talking about. And the questions they asked me back to make me think about the friendship made me realize that this is actually a friendship that I've outgrown.
Yeah.
And it's actually a friendship that doesn't serve me. But because I'm so close to this person, it's like I've got a toxic attachment to this friendship because I don't want to lose all the memories that we have. But I'm trying to rationalize with myself that I won't be losing the memories. It's just come to a natural end.
Yeah.
It's like nothing's happened.
And I think that's the important thing, because when you have, and I'm sure everybody's experienced, when you have a friendship and you've built memories and you've done lots of things with somebody, the fear of losing all of that, or it's not necessarily losing because that's happened, right? You've experienced that's in the bank. The fear of perhaps never experiencing it again, if you make that move and that friendship becomes something else, as in you're not necessarily as close or you've outgrown that relationship, that's the bit that I think wants me to keep the door ajar but not address the fact that the relationship has changed. So it's similar to what you're describing. For me, it's where I feel that I worry about the reaction, but I also know that the friendship is not a true friendship. So I've found out stuff that's not necessarily as it's been presented. And I don't know about you, but being lied to makes me feel really small, and I really hate it because I think it's insulting to my intelligence, especially when it's over absolute BS. It's just like, you clearly do not know me as well, or you don't rate me as well as a friend. However, I value some of the interactions that we have. But if we go back to what we said at the beginning of the conversation, is that authenticity counts. It counts for a lot. I don't think anything will grow to something significant if you don't have that authenticity. I don't care if it's your business, I don't care if it's your career, I don't care if it's your personal growth. You got to be true to yourself. Otherwise, at some point, one of the bricks will come undone because it doesn't belong there and the whole thing will come crashing down. So, it's difficult trying to maneuver in those spaces. But I think I'm getting to an age now where I'm confident in myself that I can own things. And if I get things wrong, I'm not too big to go back and say, you know what, I was wrong and I'm really sorry. Yeah. Where's that humble pie? Let's eat it. Let's down it with some Pinot Grigio and move on, you know. But equally, it's got to be a friendship that works for both parties. Because mm-hmm. if you and I are friends and all I do is take, you'll soon get bored of me and I'm not replenishing that friendship. If there's a problem and that we can't discuss it, or you feel like I'm scared of broaching this subject with Bren because I don't know how she's going to react, so I'm just going to keep a lid on it, that equally is not helpful. So I try to make sure that my friendships are ones that I can address those issues, have a blowout if we have to, and then move on.
That's a telltale sign as well. I think if you're not able to have the, and obviously it depends on where you are in your journey of the friendship mm-hmm. with that person, because if it's a new one, then obviously
just
it makes sense why you might be apprehensive. Yeah,
not done that before.
But I think if you've known someone for a very long time, you might have had conflict with them before, and you're still unable to just easily approach them to tell them, you know, when you done this, it upset me and made me feel like that, without fearing that you're not going to be understood or you're going to be gaslighted. I think that's when it's like, okay, maybe this isn't a friendship for me exactly. anymore. And I think that's what my thought process was recently. I realised that I'm a really, really forgiving person, mm-hmm. like extremely forgiving. And I think that a recent romantic relationship made me realise how forgiving I am and how important it is for me to be forgiven back mm-hmm. in relationships. And I thought, if I apply that same notion to my friendships, where do I stand? And I realised that with this particular person that I'm talking about, I realised that something that happened years ago, I haven't been forgiven for. And whilst it doesn't like have a direct influence or effect on our relationship day to day, the fact that I'm still being held accountable to the mistake that was years ago is actually a problem for me,
yeah.
because it makes me feel like I can't actually be who I am today, and I can't flourish in the growth that I have put in the work that mm-hmm. I have put in. I also appreciate and value that people heal and forgive in their own times. And it's not up to me to tell you, oh, I've gotten over this, so you now should be over
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, let me ask you this. So let's fast forward 6 months from now. You've had a conversation and you've decided to part ways. So you can't agree. There's no way of meeting in the middle. Mm-hmm. What do you see as being different in your day-to-day 6 months down the line?
Well, realistically, nothing. I feel like I've just done a lot of inner work, and I realise that what they offer me, mm-hmm. I actually can't offer myself, but I just don't like to.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, sometimes a situation might occur, and you know what the decision is you should take, mm-hmm. but you might go to your friend because you trust their judgment and know that whatever they tell you is probably going to be the right thing.
Yeah.
This person's views is like that, but they generally typically align with my own anyway. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I need to trust in myself and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And ultimately, because I've got a wider sisterhood that I've all been carefully selected for a reason, I know I'm going to be good either way. And I think it will take a huge weight off my shoulders, because I didn't realise how much that one unforgiveness thing subconsciously
affects.
Is affecting me and how I view myself.
Yeah. So that was actually, you've brought it around quite nicely, because the reason I was asking you about what would be different in 6 months' time is you said nothing, but actually there would be a big difference, because that loop will be closed, because that's a loop that's playing again and again and again in your mind and taking up space in your mind, that this is there, this is not giving you peace of mind. You don't have total peace of mind because you're either in or out. You, at the moment, you're on the fence. So I think both you and I are big mental health proponents. We want to talk about well-being, like not just mm-hmm. go to a spa and, you know, have a massage, but, you know, really decluttering life with stuff that bogs you down and being mindful of what you have in your life that allows you to be yourself. Because everybody knows life is so busy. There's so much stuff going that will get you down. So if we can curate our spaces so that we are well, part of that is actually just offloading people. I know it doesn't sound very nice, but mm-hmm. Some relationships need to be offloaded. Not because those people are bad people, or sometimes they are and they just need to go. They're not nice people, and that's that. And that's the. And sometimes I'm the person who's not the nice person in a relationship.
And I think it's important. I saw a quote a few years ago, and it said, "You have to accept that sometimes you're going to be the villain in someone else's story, even if you don't think you did anything wrong."
Yeah.
And I read that, and I said, "Ooh, okay."
Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes I could be the villain, and somebody's narrative about how that relationship panned out would be oh, she wasn't very nice, and she did who this, you know. So I accept that. That being said, at the end of the day, I need to be able to say, right, I've got a thing happening and I'm going to call people, that I'm at peace with who I have front and center, and not thinking, well, this person should be in, but I can't really have them in, because I don't want that, because that's that. I don't have time or resources to deal with that, because I know if I try to, it messes me up. It messes my mood. That affects the time that I have with my children. And time, nobody can give me back. It affects time that I have in front of my work. And I'm trying to achieve big things. And I can't achieve big things if I'm allowing small things that can be dealt with and parked and left to the side to eat into that space. I can't be a good friend to other people if I start having these loops in the back of my mind that, you know, friends can do this to you, or this person. It starts to feed into other friendships that you have, because you start to view friendships with a new filter. Like, if this person can be doing this to me and it's happening constantly and you've not put a break on it, that's a loop that feeds into how... So somebody else will do something minor and your immediate reaction is, oh, it's happening again. And then you follow up the same loop. So breaking those loops is really, really important. However, somebody really, really wise said to me, always leave the door ajar. And that's really, really difficult, because who I am today is not necessarily who I'm going to be in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that we grow at different paces, and that, let's say I've been outgrown and somebody has moved on and I'm the friend who needs to be left behind. If they shut that door permanently and I grow and meet them where they are, let's say we're parallel lives and we meet each other and I don't know, we're in New York somewhere and I see them like, oh my God, how are you? And we rekindle. If that door's been shut firmly, I will walk past and I will lose out on a lifetime, 1 year, 3 years of an amazing connection that I would have had with somebody that I've had an amazing connection with before. And leaving the door ajar means that bumping into them at the airport, you can have that conversation without any anxiety. And you might have both grown whatever was a big issue in life at that time that made that friendship not viable. It's no longer an issue. I know for a fact that things that were bothering me 7 years ago don't bother me now. And some things that bother me today, 7 years ago, they were like, nothing. They were small fry. Like, why is this such an issue? So somebody said to me, always leave the door ajar. And that's really difficult, particularly when I feel I've been wronged. Where I feel, and this is normally where I feel I've been super supportive. I've given and I've given and I've given. And all I want to say to them is go away and never come back. And on one occasion, I'll share is where I've firmly shut the door and my departure was not gracious. It was not nice. And I gave the person every reason to tell a story that would be very accurate to say, I wasn't very nice. I wasn't very gracious. I wasn't very respectful. But because that door is shut, I don't think there'll ever be a way in. 5 years hence, if we bumped into each other, what would happen? What would be the kind of interaction that we have? And I think I could have dealt with that better in a sense that, and it impacts other people, because now what happens is if there's things that we have mutual friends in, somebody has to make a decision as to who's coming and who's not coming.
Yeah.
And that's messy. And I'm not proud of that. And I'm that was a lesson learnt to 3 years ago, 2 years ago, to say that there's a better way of handling, which is why I'm really sensitive about this friendship that I've mentioned now, where I'm like, I need to deal with it, but I need to deal with it in a way that allows everybody to go away and just simmer and bring it to the table to say, I want this friendship to work, but these are the things that I'm finding difficult to deal with. I'm sure you've got your reasons why these things are happening, but this is how I'm feeling. But if we circle back to the whole sisterhood thing, what's been really, really nice is having friends that I can talk to about how I'm feeling, and then being able to hold a mirror up to me to say, yeah, Bren, you are not the nice guy, but and not make excuses for me, but equally to say, you're a human being, you know, let it go. You let it go. If for whatever reason you find a way back, great. If not, that's it. That's just how this cookie has crumbled. So just move on. So that's been really good in terms of allowing me to learn my lesson and move forward without carrying too much baggage. At the time, I felt I was fully justified, I can tell you.
I do really like that, though, because I remember one time I was talking to a friend and I said to her, like, I found out why XYZ is talking to me. Like, it's just ridiculous. Her reasons don't even make sense. And I read through the chat and this is a friend who's really honest with me and will tell me when I'm going wrong. Mm-hmm. And she goes, to be honest, I don't understand what her problem is. She goes, however, something she did say in that message was that she didn't like your attitude on one of those days.
Yeah.
And she goes, and Shan, you do know that sometimes your attitude isn't the most pleasant. So even if you know that the reason why you're now currently not speaking may actually not have a valid reason, it really has made me be like, it's actually true. Every situation I'm in, any relationship that ends or starts, you always have an opportunity to reflect on what you can do better. And I feel like even if you've got friendships, but you've never argued with them, nothing ever goes wrong, there's always something you can do better.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know the answer until you ask them. And sometimes they may even say to you, oh, I don't know, because they've never even
considered it. Everything's great. Inside them. Yeah, everything's great.
Do you get what I mean? But actually, when, like, for example, on my birthday, one of my friends that I wrote in the card, I literally, all I said is, I love you to bits, but I want to see you more. You spend so much time with your other friends, and when I need you, you're always there. That's something I can't question or challenge. But when it comes to, like, making memories of you as my friend, I miss that. I want us to go back to that. Yeah. And because we was a friend at uni, I think we took that for granted because we lived together, so it was really easy
to do stuff,
to do things like that. But actually, I realised how important it is. But I think coming to a close now with this conversation, which I've really enjoyed, actually.
Yeah, me too.
What advice do you have for people when it comes to making friends?
My advice, or what I've found works for me, is just being myself. I'm not afraid of embarrassing myself. I might be a bit of an oversharer, so that helps. But I think people connect better with you when you share yourself, and it's not a calculated thing. You know, Shan, one of my funniest stories I've ever shared is something to do with oranges and stuff. But you'd be amazed how many people sort of send me gifts of oranges just because of that. They're like, oh, I saw this and I thought of you. But that opens up an avenue for deeper connections or more meaningful connections. I would say if you're going to make friends, be open. There's a chance it won't pan out and it will just be somebody you know, and that's fine. But remembering what's important to other people and being genuine in their interests, I find is amazing. I do this for work as well. I work in sales, building relationships and getting people to part with their money for excellent services and products, of course. But in friendships, I'll use the same notion. I don't sort of use sales techniques on people, but it is essentially about building relationships, and you've got to relate to each other, whether it's on what books you like, whether it's where you like to travel, whether it's, you know, I don't know, funny stories, whether it's a big event like Black Lives Matter that's affecting you. I think loads of people opened up and shared, and I felt connected to them because that was an event that we were all going through at the same time. You mentioned that I met with Ashley and I met with Daniela in like the last couple of weeks, and literally we met in a WhatsApp group. And typically there are people who, Daniela was somebody who will share, and she always shares her stories and what's going on and her business and her passions, and I'll sort of question something or ask her something like, what's this? And then, oh, should we do this? And then we found out we had similar things that we had anxieties about, like, oh, I'm not really big on networking, but I'm pushing myself to network a little bit more. And we were like, oh, but I was like, you always seem so confident. But then we found out we were actually similar, and we'll share things like something her daughter does or something my kids have said. And meeting her for the first time was just a continuation of that. So it didn't feel like she's from the internet and now she's in real life. It was literally a very natural thing. Similarly with Ashley, she shared her Gallivant YouTube, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've just watched it. You're in the same city as me. Can we meet up? And that was like she might think you're a creep. She's like, some girl from some WhatsApp group has seen my YouTube video and now she wants to meet up. And she was open, and I was like, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not a creep, but I just really wanted to meet somebody that we share similar things. And I think you're pretty cool and you're pretty dope. Can we meet up? And actually, we get on really, really well.
And I think on that note then, like, about community groups, I probably shout out, obviously, Dope Black Women, because this is the platform. Yep. We've got a WhatsApp group. There's Dope Black Mums, Dope Black Dads, Dope Black Queers, Dope Black Disabled, Dope Black Men. And then outside of the Dope Black family, I'd probably shout out Black Girls Camping Trip, which I'm a part of. Black Girls Hike, I think it's called. Black Girls Do Run. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one called Black Adventurers. And there's loads of other groups, I think, that a lot of people can connect with. We share them on our page a lot.
Yeah.
I just think groups are a really good way.
Absolutely.
And I think they're less daunting than, like, going to a church and meeting someone at church where, like, they may already have their friendship group.
Exactly.
And it feels a bit weird to go and approach them, or, like, go into a workshop or a course. And these all are obviously places where you can meet people. I think having, like, Dope Black Women and looking at the way that we all engage with each other has really shown me that it's such a great way to make friends as well.
And if you can, I mean, add me to the camping. I'm a happy camper. I love camping. So I need to get some of that community love or camping love.
Because I've met loads of people in the gym, actually. I've been in the gym and I've met someone and said, oh, your outfit's nice. Oh, what days do you come? Oh, every Thursday. Oh, I've noticed you every Thursday. Do you want to come next Thursday together? And we work out and we train. And then they've become my friend. Like, I've had that. And not like long-term friends. It's more so been when I've lived in a different city outside of my hometown. Mm-hmm. But I think that you don't realise, I guess, how much you need people like that in those situations. And they feel they have a purpose in that time, in that space. And then you leave and it's not a weird ending.
Yeah.
You're just moving to a different place. And you know that you was ultimately just gym friends or just walk to work friends or whatever.
I have one more tip. When I tell people I'm shy, they don't believe me. But inner Bren is very, very shy. And I've had to work really, really hard at overcoming the shyness. So if you are shy and you fear making that first move, I'll just say, start with a hello, how are you, and leave it at that. And then have a follow-up question ready, because like Shan just said, your outfit's nice. It's such a nice opener, because that's a really nice compliment. It's genuine. You wouldn't say that if you didn't think the outfit was nice. And most people will react positively to that. So if you're shy, just have a couple of things, practice them in the mirror and go for it, because people are often a lot nicer than we think they are.
Yeah, I think that's good, because also with the outfit one, what normally happens is they say, oh, thank you, I got it from JD or I got it from Primark, and you're like, oh my gosh, Primark, they sell stuff like that, I love it there, I've never seen that. And they're like, yeah, I got it like last summer, and by the time
you've exchanged three or four things
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So I've really enjoyed this talk. I think we've explored the good side of friendships, what sisterhood looks like, the kind of friends we can be to other people. Mm-hmm. And also really, I think we've both been open at where we've got shortcomings and where we've actually failed in being a supportive sisterhood. And I think that's important that we don't ever paint friendships as perfect things, because that's not true. Yeah. We all have faults, and owning them is part of how we realise we've got room to grow still. So I've really, really enjoyed this, actually.
Thank you. I have as well. And for anyone listening, if you want to join the WhatsApp group, you can by clicking on the link tree in our Instagram, which is at Dope Black Woman 1. And you can also connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at Dope Black Woman.